I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
Well, you just heard our theme song, so you know where you're at the right place. This is I Like the Movie Movie, and I'm Steven Richards,
and my name is Dan Scully. And before I hit record, I said, Steve, you want to pop a hot, tasty intro? And he said that he would. And not to open up with the judgment, but what the fuck was that?
No, you did not. You paraphrased what I actually said before you started to record.
Yeah, you did say that you were going to take
I was going to take a hot shit all over the intro, which I did do.
Fair enough. I'll allow it.
Yeah.
But right on, before we get started, as you know, you can find us at Movie Movie Cast on all of the things. So a big welcome to our new listeners. A big welcome back to all of our repeat listeners. Please continue subscribing. This is going to sound ridiculous. Subscribe on Spotify if you can, because if you do, we can hit you with advertisements, which is what everybody wants. So you want it. You want to hear ads.
Slap you right in the face with that the Bombas ad.
Yeah, exactly. We want money. And but you can donate to the pod in other ways as well. There should be a link in the show notes. But most importantly, reach out to us and just let us know what you want us to talk about, because that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
But as is standard with I Like to Movie Movie, every time a new Fast and Furious movie comes out, we devote an episode to it. So today, Steven's already shaking his head.
And we're one mortal step closer to having this just absolute hellscape end.
Well, there's two more if Vin Diesel's red carpet comments are to be believed.
He really monkey wrenched us with that. Oh, by the way, it's Fast X is going to be three movies.
Yes, Fast X is Fast X, Fast X 2, and Fast X 3, X-Men
Fast
United.
Fast X 2 United and Fast X 3.
3 was United, wasn't it? No, Days of Future Past was X-Men 4.
I know, but he doesn't follow the rules.
Yeah, that's true. He breaks all of the rules. Yeah. And we're going to be covering Fast X, and then a little bit later in the episode, we are going to count down some of our favorite movies about cars.
Yeah.
Real simple. Because it was either that or family, but every movie is about family. So
yeah, well, with real cars. Simple is a really great way to depict what this movie really makes you feel.
Well, tell me,
fucking simple.
I feel like we had opposite reactions to this movie, Fast X. Yeah. A little background though before we get started. Fast X, as you guys know, is the 10th in the 11 series movies, the 10th movie proper in the Fast series, but the 11th in the Fast extended universe, 12th if you count Justin Lin's A Better Tomorrow, which I do. And this is the third one since Paul Walker left, and is supposed to be the beginning of a trilogy that closes out the series in its entirety. Justin Lin was on to direct, and very early on in the process, a few days into shooting, he walked. No one knows why. Everyone assumes it's because Vin Diesel's a bitch. And
I know
Louis Leterrier, the guy who did the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk, I believe he did the original, Transporter, but an action director in his own right, has made some shiny blockbuster things, stepped in, and is apparently going to be finishing the rest of the series.
Louis Leterrier,
the Sparkling Perrier.
Yeah. I know why Justin Lin left.
Why do you think Justin Lin left?
Because he saw just what a fucking dog shit pile of steaming crap this was.
Here's the thing, though. He has
and ran like a thief in the night from this train wreck.
He wrote the movie. He co-wrote the movie.
Well, he must have been hammered.
I mean, but he's also like kind of
I didn't know
the
they still made
the
Quaaludes,
series.
Dan.
I wish they did. I want to try them so bad. I hear they're so good. He was like the architect of the series, because he came on in, I want to say, did he do Tokyo Drift?
No.
He didn't do Tokyo Drift. I know he did the
Tokyo Drift was actually Woody Allen.
Can you imagine? They're just like hanging around New York. Like I was doing a turn, but I took it tight, and my wheels, they went sliding. You wouldn't believe
slipping.
It.
I just started slipping.
I know
all
it's
over
considered a good thing when your wheels have good traction, but when it was drifting, people thought of it as a better thing.
I call it Schmearin' Broadway.
Tokyo Drift was directed by Justin Lin. Yes.
Oh, I thought you said Look Within.
No, you didn't, and I didn't, but that's okay. We'll go with it. No, he did three, and so a little background. One came out. It was like a Point Break ripoff. Two, Vin Diesel was like, I'm way too important.
This is stupid.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I want to do a movie about aliens.
Yeah, with Paul Walker and Tyrese, and then they said, these people are pushing 40. But the kids like these movies, so let's make it young. And they did Tokyo Drift, and that was such a hit that Vin Diesel came back into the series as executive producer, did a post-credit sequence for part three, re-involving him in it. Han, who dies in three, was such a hit that four became a prequel, and Justin Lin continued being the architect of the series. Five and six, it sort of found its footing. Seven, James Wan took over. And then eight was F. Gary Gray. And then nine, Justin Lin came back. We thought he was going to finish it, and he walked. And now it's Louis Leterrier.
More like F. Gary, hey, get your hands off my franchise.
That's right. You bastard. Gary. And I don't know Love Lost to F. Gary Gray, but Fast 8 is the one that didn't do it to me. Do it for me.
That's when I started to realize, I don't know if this franchise can survive Paul Walker's death.
I feel like it took a big change with Paul Walker's death for the worse. That said, I liked 9 well enough, but I think Fast X is my favorite of the post-Paul Walker era.
9 sucks. Well, that's like saying my favorite hemorrhoid is the one closest to my asshole.
All right. Well, I mean, if it's any further away from your asshole, it's probably not a hemorrhoid. It's just a little butt pimple, a little bump.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, when you have like a full-on quado right on your butthole, it's the worst.
Yeah. They're all not good movies. And this one, at this point, and I've thought about this all day, and my main argument as to why I'm done with this franchise is that they're just sitting here and wasting my time.
Why do you say that, though? Because like I came out of Fast X, because I went in and I was like, I'm kind of tired of these things. I'm not really, you know, I'm sort of over this. I think it wore out its welcome. And I emerged from Fast X. I was like, we're only getting two more. Keep them fucking coming. And with the caveat that it's definitely the dumbest fucking movie I've ever seen in my whole life.
It is.
But I loved it, man.
And they're moving. I know how this is going to sound, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah,
they're
moving
way too fast and way too quick and cavalier with the script.
I would agree with that. My only response is that I feel like at this point, to try and rein it all in and make it small again is just not going to happen. And so they've gone the other way with it, and they've just turned it into a, you know, an extended series worth of soap operatics, but kept it in movie format.
Now, I did not take notes because I'll be honest with the listener here. We only decided to talk about Fast X since I'm assuming I told Dan that I saw it, and he said, let's do that one.
Yeah.
So I didn't really go in prepared, but knowing also I didn't have to.
Yeah.
Because I, even though I won't remember the details because my brain has blocked them out because of how dumb they are, I know Dan will use his talent of recall that he is very in tune after years of doing this to remind me of certain points, and then I will comment on those as they come up.
Well, I'm going to ask you this. When you saw movie...
With that, I wanted to go into one thing that I did remember.
Yeah.
And it was this is the dumbest thing, and this is the moment where my eyes almost rolled out of my head. But this is a huge spoiler because, like, one of the last things that happened.
Oh, yeah. Spoilers abound here on out. If you aren't willing to be spoiled, fuck off.
The last line of Vin Diesel's Dominic Toretto in this film, we don't know if he's still alive, cliffhanger. They definitely tried to pull over an Infinity War on us, which, like, I don't care enough about these characters for that to emotionally resonate, but that's a different point. But the last thing was like classic, almost parody level trope, like Bond trope, where Jason Momoa's character's like, I've got you now, Dom. You're trapped on a dam with two big robot controlled oil tankers that are going to crash into each other
with like you in the Matrix. Middle.
And now I've got you. And then Dominic Toretto's like, oh, I'm going to do Rocky as Dominic Toretto.
Obviously. I think henceforth, Stallone is going to be the voice we use for Vin Diesel. Yeah.
You forgot about one thing. You didn't take away my car.
Yeah. And
it drives off the dam as it explodes and uses the natural architecture of the dam to then fly, not fly, but like ramp himself out into the vastness of the dam water area. Which, by the way, would kill both of them on impact.
Well, you have to understand that Dominic Toretto,
that's what I'm cherry picking from this,
has the ability to control gravity using just facial expressions.
Yeah,
because there's no way that car would then settle back down into the curvature of the dam, but he's able to grimace his way into it, and I bought it.
The other thing I did not buy, which I just want to touch on really quickly, and then we can get into everything else, is the emotional, and I'm putting the biggest air quotes on that, sacrificing of John Cena.
Well,
because here's what I heard in that little monologue. And again, this is going to be Sylvester Stallone as John Cena.
Please, Stallone should be all of the meatheads in these movies.
As they're driving down, and like John Cena's got to use his cannon car, which is a car with two cannons strapped to either side, which apparently can move independently of each other.
Baby Brian, who has already been represented as three different distinct races throughout the series, has now racked up a pretty hefty kill count of his own, invoking him in part of the family. He blew up so many dudes, and he's like nine. Get that boy a Corona and a prayer. Let's go.
But here's how I heard John Cena's final speech. All right, well, I know in a couple minutes here, you're going to have Dwayne The Rock Johnson walk through that cinema door. And then I know that there can only be one wrestler in this franchise at a time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kill my character so that you and your son can get away. I love you, Dom, even though I am the whitest dude ever.
Yeah.
And there's no way that I would be born in the Dominican Republic. Goodbye. Well,
that's one of the things, though, that's I mentioned this in my review of Fast X, is that they've discovered this weird rule of, as long as I call attention to it, I don't actually have to explain it. And in Fast 9, Charlize Theron's character, Cypher, makes a quick reference to, Dom, your family tree is as racially ambiguous as it comes, because this Jacob fella is like pretty white. And they never explain the why or the how. Or the what, but because she said that, we all go, well, we know they didn't ignore it, even though functionally they did ignore it. As long as you call attention to it, you know, like when Tyrese is just like, are we invincible? We don't ever seem to die. And everyone's like, ha ha. And then us at home, we're like, no, he's got a valid question, but they called attention to it. It's enough.
And like multiple times in this movie too, they go like, at least I would say three separate times they talk about how, man, this gang's come a long way from stealing DVDs.
Yeah.
Like, just to again, set the stage for you that this is no longer the I'm stealing stuff from the back of a truck era.
See, I think
this is the Taylor Swift Eras Tour era of the Fast Family.
I think it's a smart move that they made, and it's the only move that they could make, but it, like, Fast 8 took itself too seriously. And
what?
Fast 8 took itself too seriously in terms of like the tone. Nobody was having fun in that entry. Fast 9 returns to the fun, but it started getting a little more meta like that, where they started to like really call attention to how ridiculous it is, which I think in view of the entire series sucks, but in view of like getting up to 9 of these and like not recognizing that is probably the move to make. Because in Fast X, they call attention to how ridiculous it is a lot. Yeah. And whereas that can be a little annoying, I don't mind, because at least everyone appears to be having fun again. Because in Fast 8, it really did not look like anybody was having fun. Fast Nine, I think they had a little more fun. This, especially Momoa, they were all having a blast, which is why I think the movie resonated with me. But I wanted to point out, in regards to what you said about them being like, remember when these guys stole DVD players? One of my favorite parts of this movie was when the guy who plays Jack Reacher in the Jack Reacher show is going through the history of the family. There's all these monitors that are showing the family's previous antics, but they're just clips from the movies.
Yeah.
And so in the world of Fast and the Furious, it's like, who was filming that?
God's Eye.
I guess God's Eye, but it's like, wow, God's Eye is a pretty strong AI because it actually understands blocking, direction, the framing of a shot. It somehow can scatter cameras to all angles so that we can get the most maximum action-packed version of this data collection that the agency was apparently...
I'm not that hung up on it.
But here's the thing. I'm not hung up on it. When that happened, that thought occurred to me. I whispered it to my buddy Josh. Hi, Josh. And we both shared a laugh, and then we just went with it because we're like, this is fucking crazy. Let's go. But that's my question to you is, when you saw this movie, what was the crowd like?
It was, this is great, actually. I didn't write this down, but I wanted to. I saw the 11 a.m. on a Saturday at the local theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say there was maybe 12 people all day in there.
Okay.
There was 3 people in my row, including me. About what I would mark halfway through. I've only seen it once, so it's hard to get these marks in your first watch. But I would mark about halfway through, the person on my right got up to what I thought was a bathroom break, but they never returned.
They're like, fuck this.
Right after the John Cena sacrifice moment, the guy on my left went for what I thought was a bathroom break and never returned.
Well, he didn't miss much else. That's sort of the swan song.
I know, but like, if you get that far, right?
Yeah.
And also, let's talk about the ending real quick.
Finish your theater experience.
Oh, that was pretty much it. Because no one else really reacted.
Mine was a press/promo screener. And it was a giant theater in KOP, and it was packed with people who were jacked up. And so I am open to the idea that my extreme enjoyment of this movie, and that's a capital X with no E at the beginning when I say extreme, an extreme enjoyment of this movie was largely informed by the fact that I had a great crowd that was there to fuck. Like, we were there at a party. And so it ended up being a raucous good. Like, remember when you and I saw Fast 9, how that crowd was like game?
Yeah.
I feel like that, and that helped with the, because that movie, the second time I watched it, wasn't nearly as good because I was just watching it at home.
Yeah.
And I think that I had a similar experience with Fast X, which, although I liked it better than Fast 9, I am open to the idea that it was the vibe that really helped get it, to use a racing term, across the finish line. Huh?
Well, it is a dog shit film.
Fair enough. Since the thing is, I don't want to push back on it because all conventional film wisdom will tell me that this movie is crap. But I had so much fun watching it, and I think that's all I need. But I can see... But
like, okay, what the fuck is Gal Gadot doing back?
Yeah, that's one of those... Because here's the thing, I don't think Jacobs did, because one... He was in a car. And as we've learned, when you're in cars, you can't get hurt. I don't even know if he was actually in the car. I have a very difficult time seeing John Cena. He's very shifty like that. But three, now that Gal Gadot is back, literally every prominent family member who has died has undied.
Yeah.
And so I don't really, there's no weight in Jacob being dead. Because I know that Jacob will be back.
I'd rather he didn't come back.
I'd rather he didn't do. I'd rather none of them come back.
If I'm being completely honest,
the only one I wanted back was Han, and I legitimately thought that Han was going to discover Giselle on his dating app, and well, that was going to be how they return it.
There was so much like hand holding throughout this movie. Like, I knew Gal Gadot was coming back because there was a scene. There's like a flashback scene from Han where she like showed up in like a flashback or something. I forget what happened. And at that moment, I was like, well, now I know she's coming back. Because it's like, you know how like when you're watching a TV show It's like previously on like The Witcher or something. Yeah, like,
so you know what they're going
to
address.
He had to relearn this spell. So yeah. You're like, you know, that's coming back in this episode.
Yeah.
And so I knew Gal Gadot was coming back in this episode. And then the other thing was the guy that plays Jack Reacher in the show Jack Reacher. He was so obviously the dude that was gonna betray them.
Oh, like, yeah.
From the beginning. I did not even know who Brie Larson's character was at this point. But we're introduced to both of them at the same time, pretty much. And I knew for a fact he was going to be the one that betrays the family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What I think's funny about that, though, is that that was a weird betrayal because he was like, see, I'm bad. And they're like, you were chasing us with the intention of killing us anyway.
Yeah.
Why is this a breakthrough? And like,
yeah, I know you're joking, but the see, I'm bad is like literally the vibe that I got from that. Him like standing on the mountain with the rocket launcher. He's like, see? I'm a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, subtlety is not the name of the game when it comes to Fast X. They literally have to do that.
Yep. Check that off the list. I'm holding a big rocket launcher. Yep.
Check.
You can tell by my demeanor and my stance, I'm the bad guy.
So, and he does call attention to this, again, without explaining it, when he's going through the trials and tribulations of the family. He says, and everybody who's ever a bad guy ultimately becomes a good guy. And he's incredulous about it.
Yeah.
But he is right, because every bad guy is now a good guy. That's what I found so refreshing about Jason Momoa, is that his character, yes, he has some retconned reason why he's pissed at Dom and the gang, but he actually just gets a boner from doing bad things. He's just evil. And I like that he's so evil that they're not going to be able to redeem him. I enjoy that we actually have a villain who's villainous, because they did it with Statham and it didn't take. Like, I never believed that Shaw was actually good when he went good. And they kind of sort of hemmed and hawed on it to now he's like a reluctant good guy. He's not quite there.
Yeah.
But like, I like that Momoa is just like, I'm coming after you, Dom, for revenge. And because when you die, it's going to make me come so goddamn hard, and I love to come. And like, I feel like that vibe is going to carry him as a good villain for the rest of the series, because I thought Momoa stole the whole movie, and I really did not expect him to be good in it at all. And dude, he's the best villain of the series, for my money.
I will agree with you on that, yes.
He's just like this like kind of like effete weird guy. He's dressed in clothing from all shades of the gender spectrum. He's fashionable, he's weird, and he takes dead henchmen and he tapes their eyeballs open and talks to them and paints their nails. Funny. That was awesome. That was from a different series entirely, but it found its way into this series. That was dark and cool.
Real quick about Statham, though, I want to again do a little Steven theater about how I perceived the scene as it happened. And this is the scene where Han goes to confront,
which was previously the post-credit sequence in Fast 9. Yes.
Yeah. And because, again, you know, it's the only person that can help us. Oh, I guess I'll have to go talk to this guy, even though we're not really getting along right now. So I got to go talk to Jason Statham. Hey, what's up, Jason Statham? And then he's like, now we're just fighting. Wait, I just want to talk to you. No, they only pay me to fight in this movie. So let's fight. Bang, boom, boom. Whoa, oh no, other bad guys.
Yep.
Now we're working together. Again, just like old times.
Well, and then they're like, you have to go to England for some reason. He's like, oh, I've got to get to England. And then he like runs off to save his mother. And then he's out of the movie.
Let me stuff a bag full of guns.
Well, I want the movie that tells me the story of who that guy was in his punching bag, who not only pissed Shaw off enough that he locked him in a punching bag and beat him up, but is so durable that he can get run over by a tank while in the punching bag and then still run away at the end. Yeah. I want that that like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead story to be told.
I'd rather not know.
I mean, I guess if I like cared
like that.
If I cared about the story overall the way that I used to at around the time of Fast 6, I wouldn't want to know. But now that I've reached a point of whatever, they're coming, so I'm just going to keep watching these fucking things, I'll take whatever. Although, then again, Hobbs and Shaw I thought was crap, so could go either way.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that because they obviously set Shaw up on this little journey here, all of our heroes are kind of separate at the moment right now.
Yeah, because nobody wants to be on set with Vin Diesel.
It just sucks. But Shaw is like about to go on his own mission, and then the post credit scene is Hobbs pretty much getting called out as well.
Yeah.
Do you think these will be resolved in Fast X2 X-Men United, or do you think they're going to make Hobbs and Shaw 2? Hey, Shawty, what that thing do?
I think because Hobbs and Shaw didn't like do that well critically or financially, I don't think. I'm pretty sure that they're just going to be back in the Fast series proper. But I think that it is going to be handled. Like, you could feasibly do the rest of this series without putting The Rock and Vin Diesel into the same room. And so I think that's going to be the key, is that we're going to have a Hobbs and Shaw adventure, the same way that we had a Tej, Roman, and Ramses adventure in the middle of Fast X that had fuck all to do with Vin Diesel, because everyone's so scattered to the wind and you know, nothing matters anymore and nobody stays dead. So it is what it is. But because part of the drama, at least as I understand it, between Rock Diesel is, I'm only half joking when I say that they were in a really intense scene and they accidentally kissed and everything got weird. That's probably part of it. But a lot of it is also because when they spun off into Hobbs and Shaw, they delayed the Fast movies for a little bit and Vin Diesel got weird about that. But it seems that at the same time that we're all running out of juice on the Fast series, and The Rock sort of did to Black Adam what he claimed Vin Diesel was doing to Fast, and we all kind of ran out of love for The Rock, it's time for them to come back together and like win us all back. Is
and
what
now
I think
DC's
happening here.
On the outs in general, bring back Wonder Woman too, I guess.
Yeah, well, exactly. She's not really going to come back as Wonder Woman. It's highly unlikely. Because like she probably got killed off because of the Wonder Woman. She was, you know, contracted to Wonder Woman. So I think that, yeah, it's a little bit of that. But I also think that there's a little bit of, are you familiar with the term kayfabe?
No.
Kayfabe is what it's referred to when wrestlers maintain the narrative outside of the ring. There's a reason why, The Rock, we'll just say, The Rock and John Cena in WWE. If they're hanging out at a bar somewhere, they don't have to maintain kayfabe because they're just two dudes hanging out. But if they're walking around backstage at WWE, even if the cameras aren't on them, they have to maintain kayfabe so that if anybody sees them, their beef seems real.
Ah.
And so kayfabe is the art of keeping the narrative alive, even though everybody knows it's fake. You keep it alive for the illusion of it. That's kayfabe. It's like the maintenance of that illusion. Question is, when was The Rock actually decided to return? And is any amount of his beef with Diesel some kayfabe that's been managed by those on high?
I like to think that there's a little bit of both. Hollywood is Hollywood for a reason. You know?
Yeah, I would agree. I know that his inclusion, or I'm assuming kayfabe, K-A-Y-F-A-B-E, kayfabe. It's a great word.
Oh, is that what happened to Chris Benoit's family?
I mean, some believe that that's true. Unfortunately, I think that he crossed the line into a point where you don't maintain kayfabe. But like, you know, that's
I'm sorry, everyone.
When I think of family, I think of Fast and Furious. And when I think of Fast and Furious family, I think of Stone Cold Murder, because that's what they are bonded by. So I don't think that you're out of line in making that suggestion at all.
Well, when you put it like that.
So here's a great example of kayfabe.
When I think of family, I think about Fast and Furious at the Olive Garden, the ultimate family.
When I was at the premiere, there was this guy there who said, oh, I'm in the movie. I'm Vin Diesel's stunt double. And he was this guy who looked like Bobo Vin Diesel. And so we're calling him Vin Petroleum. And but I looked him up. He is not in the movie. He's not Vin Diesel's stunt double. He is a stuntman. I got a picture with him. He was very nice. He is a stuntman, but his job is that when they do like, oh, we're opening the Fast and Furious roller coaster, and then Dom and the gang shows up, he's like the cosplay Dom. He's not Vin Diesel's stunt double. But that was the joke we were making. He's like, it's me, Dominic Prosecco. When you hear your family, and we're like, ah, you're close.
He's the Avengers campus.
Yes.
Vin Diesel.
Dominic Prosecco, when you're here, your family. Yeah. But no, there's a I forget what the guy's name is because I'm not the biggest wrestling fan.
Hey, it's Nicky Tortellini, the leader of the Quick and Curvaceous crew.
There's Quick and Curvaceous. there was this guy who was like a wrestling character. He was like a wrestling coach, and in real life, he died. He actually died, but then his ashes in a jar were brought into the narrative of the WWE. And so, like, one of the wrestlers was protecting his ashes, and it got, like, smashed over his head and all that. And so it was an example of reverse kayfabe, where an actual real-life death was written into the narrative. Oh, his name was Paul Bearer, was written into the narrative of WWE. Yeah, when he died, his ashes...
The Undertaker's, like, right-hand man for a bit.
Yes, exactly. And so Paul Bearer, when he died in real life, that death was incorporated. And so he had an easy time maintaining kayfabe because all he had to do was stay dead. But everyone else, it was written into the story. And, you know, if I know these wrestling guys, I would like to think.
Part of the Fast Family.
He's part of the Fast Family. It's how we do it.
He'd be alive again.
He'd come back. Well, you never know. I got to say, I still have trouble remembering and viewing Letty and Dom as lovers. Every time that they, like, do something kind of like, they're like, oh, hey, babe, let's get into bed together. I'm like, aren't they brother
that
and sister?
That was awkward to watch, wasn't it?
Well, I'm like, aren't they brother and sister? And then I remember, I'm like, oh, no, Mia is his sister. Yeah. She's his wife, and he got married to her while wearing a wife beater. Got it. And then
Michelle Rodriguez is wearing that same wife beater in bed in that scene.
I think it's because...
Which made me laugh out loud in the theater.
I'm pretty sure Michelle Rodriguez is not into guys, and she reads that way, if you will.
I will.
And Vin Diesel, his sexuality's up in the air to be questioned, despite that he's got a wife and kids. But, you know, I still think him and The Rock touch peepees. They at least touch the tip. And so there's just this, like, it's the same way, you know how, like, Tom Cruise does not have romantic chemistry? And I don't know what it is, but, like, we've moved past Tom Cruise being a sexual item. I feel like Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez both have that energy where it's like, I can't view you as a sexual being. No. So when she, like, jumps up and wraps her legs around him, I'm like, ew, it's his sister. And, you know, it's like a white stripe situation we got going on. And I just, I don't buy them as lovers at all.
It was really strange.
And I know that Vin Diesel's, like, sort of racially ambiguous, but it is funny that him and his, Brazilian baby mama who Cypher killed multiple entries ago, they have produced a child who just keeps getting blacker with each entry.
Yeah.
And that's a wild thing to see occur. But,
well, probably because it's actually the twist is going to be it's Tyrese's son.
I mean, honestly, at this point, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that before we take a break. Tyrese, Roman and Tej, to me, they're the two fast family members that I care about the most at this point.
But they're like little like falling out. I thought it was an act. It was so poorly acted. I thought they were doing a bit within the movie, but it was real apparently.
Yeah, they really fought one another. But then I thought that when they had like that sweet little reunion, it was kind of weightless, but I thought it was very sweet. I thought that Ludacris sold that nicely. But he was like, you know what you sound like? You sound like a leader. And Roman was like, what? And then they hugged it out. And I thought that was nicely done.
I could not stop cringing the entire scene.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not going to push back on
two
that.
Two men hugging?
That's Vin Diesel material.
No, I was kidding. It was not a good scene from a script standpoint or an acting standpoint. It was very forced after an ultra forced fight. And
yeah, I thought the fight was forced, but I thought the reunion was charming.
Well, you can't have one without the other, you know, for me anyway.
Fair enough. Not even with the inclusion of Pete Davidson and a throwaway line where Han eats a psychedelic cupcake and then trips for 5 seconds. Thing,
I did eat a gummy before I went into the movie.
Fair enough.
But I thought that I had eaten something psychedelic because I was not sure what I was fucking watching I was like, why is Pete Davidson here? Is Han like going to be high for the rest of the movie? Is this going to unlock some kind of other part of the story? Nope, it just happened, and the muffin twisted a little bit, and then it was gone.
I wish that he went to go see Statham, and then during the fight with Statham, he would see Statham's face being goofy. And I think that would have been primo comedy, and it would have made that scene that much funnier if he was tripping when he...
Or like they turn into cartoons and shit.
That would be awesome.
That's a good trend.
That said, I gotta say, I've done a 180 on Pete Davidson. My first experience with Pete Davidson was just watching him on SNL. And SNL is a shitty show that seems to get worse with every season. And then I saw him do stand-up, and I saw him do roasts, and he's hilarious. And so now that Pete Davidson's kind of like a big deal, when he shows up in something, I go, you know what? All right. I'm rooting for you, guy. And I enjoyed him in this, but I also felt like it was like when Kevin Hart showed up in Hobbs and Shaw, where I was like, I like you, but what are we doing here?
Yeah, I just don't care about him at all.
Yeah, fair enough. He does look, as he said himself, like Beetlejuice when he was still alive.
Yeah,
he made that roast joke about himself. But yeah, I enjoy Tej and Roman. I care about them the most. I feel like if the series were to do another spinoff, I would just watch a spinoff of them and put Ramses in there too. But there's another one where they sort of suggest that they might have died. We all know they didn't. But the movie's cliffhanger does leave their fate up in the air, literally. Because the plane that they're on is going down, although they are running towards a car as it goes down. And as we all know, if you're in a car...
We've seen them do this before, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess before we take a break, there's one thing I want to say about the reveal on the rock. You can tell that that scene was shot in a way that they could add any audio they wanted and any cameo they wanted in case the rock opted not to return.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the way that was so designed to be as non-committal to any one person as possible so that it could be anybody. And luckily for somebody, likely The Rock said yes. But I will admit, even though I kind of figured that was happening, and so it wasn't that big of a shock, when he crushed his phone in his hand and called Jason Momoa a some bitch, I peed a little. That was incredible.
Well, yeah, you're probably holding in. It's a long movie.
It's a long movie. But I mean, that was a moment where that happened. I was like, I knew this was coming, but I'm ready to punch a hole in the wall with just sheer fucking car joy.
For me, it was, thank God I saw the early show so that my whole day isn't wasted on this turd.
But knowing you, you left the movie and then you sulked all day anyway.
No, I played Spider-Man. It was a great day.
You didn't play Rocket League? I immediately came home and played Rocket League because of that opening scene where they turned all of Rome into a Rocket League.
No, I deleted Rocket League, actually.
Fair enough. I'm waiting for Zelda to arrive. It doesn't come till Friday.
All right.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk about the filmmaking, and we'll count down our favorite car movies.
I have a lot of good ones.
Dude, so do I. Family. Hey, everybody. It's me, Dan. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if the ads on the podcast are actually working because I don't think we have enough listeners to be able to activate ads. Now, this is partially my fault because of the time that I took off from doing Movie, but that doesn't mean I can't record an ad for the podcast itself, which is what you are listening to right now. So make sure you follow I Like to Movie at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends. It would be very helpful if you could subscribe specifically on Spotify. That really beefs up the numbers. If you heard a little bell jingling, that's my cat's collar because she came running over because she can't let me record a fucking commercial in peace. Hi, Doris. Hi, Stinky. But please do all of that and check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll get you back to the show. We are part of the Hot Property Podcast Network. Peace. And we are back. Family, once again. So I just wanted to ask this really quick question. Does Brie Larson owe somebody money?
Because yeah, I don't know what she was even doing there.
What's happening? Because she won an Oscar. She was, like, delightful. And then she just kind of, like, she just kind of does crap now.
Apparently, she's a huge Fast and Furious fangirl.
I did watch a video of her talking about how exciting it was to be on set that I did find rather charming. Yeah. And so, you know, it might just be one of those things like where Helen Mirren, fellow Oscar winner, just was like, I want to be in these movies because I love them. And so, you know, I can respect that if that is indeed the case.
Yeah, because I saw a behind the scenes thing where the scene where Dom hands her the cross.
That's the one I watched. Like,
I didn't know you were going to do that. I feel really weird taking this relic from a franchise I love so much.
And he was like, yo, just take it, your family, you know? Hey,
yeah, fucking sure. Family.
If you switched out every one of Vin Diesel's lines just for I Am Groot, it would be the exact same movie. Nothing would change about it. But, I mean, all the hallmarks are there for me. I imagine that this movie does come down to a matter of taste, because I'm not about to defend it and say that it's a high point for the series. What I can say is that I had a lot of fun watching it, and it's a high point of the post-Part 7 series. But would you agree that it is better than 9 and 8? Or do you?
Well, here's what I can say. Here's what I can say.
Let's hear it.
It is something that was captured on film.
Here's the thing. That might not be true. I'm pretty sure it was probably just captured on an SD drive.
It had people that were saying and doing things.
Yes.
It had a lot of other items around in the scenery. There were cars. There were walls. Often all being destroyed.
Sometimes the twain shall meet.
Yeah. You know, things were moving fast. Things were moving furiously. This is definitely something that I paid to see.
I get it. I totally get it. If I were to... All right, here we go. Off the top of my head, off the top of my dome, I'm going to see if I can rank my favorite Fast movies. You ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
Yep.
Six.
Starting with...
My favorite to my least favorite. So okay. It's going to be 6, 5, 7, 1, 3, 2, X, 9, 4, 8, Hobbs and Shaw.
I'm going to go 5, 6, 4, 3, 1, 2, Hobbs and Shaw, X, 9, 8.
You left 7 out entirely.
I realized that as soon as I got down to Hobbs and Shaw.
Where would you insert that?
Above 1.
Okay. So in saying that, you are in agreement that Fast X is the best of the post 7 entries.
Yeah, but at what cost? at what fucking cost? Let's and that cost, the... actually, I do know it cost $17.89 and 3 hours of my life.
Fair enough. Yeah, that is a long movie, and there's two more to go, baby. How do we feel about the direction of this movie overall? Like, did you feel like the action?
Apparently there was none. If we look at the Instagram post I sent you yesterday, where apparently one of the key scenes where Michelle Rodriguez and Charlize Theron have to fight each other, the director either didn't show up or was not there by design. And they were like, we could just film it. We don't need a director. And I texted this to Dan and said, if anybody in any franchise anywhere should be saying, we don't need a director, it's not the family.
Yeah. That said, I think that might be my favorite action sequence in the whole movie.
I don't know about that.
It makes no sense because they have to team up, but I do love that line where Cypher is breaking them out of the prison and Letty goes, how much time do we have before security shows up? And she's like, about 4 minutes. And she goes, well, that'll have to do. And then starts beating her down. And even though it makes no sense, because it's like, no, get out of the jail, then you can fight her in Antarctica. Yeah. Which I love how the agency gets people all around the world, no jet lag, no question.
I like how it's called the agency.
Yeah, they're just the agency. The agents work for them. They are there to be the all-purpose. They're like the caulk that fills any gaps. It's just that the agency. The agency. It's shorthand for we didn't want to write it. And I love and hate that. But
you know what I always like to think about is like whenever you have like this overarching shadow unit like the agency or MI6 or something like that, and they all have these like really great and well-designed like dossiers and badges and all these things. Like, who did the logo for the agency?
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, there's somewhere there's a graphic designer who signed an NDA that was like, listen, we're a secret shadow government organization, but we really need a good cohesive brand. What can you do for us?
We need a brand that everyone can understand if they see it, but no one's allowed to see except us. What do you got for us? I mean, if we're going to get into the logistics of hiring, I think it's kind of weird that Cypher hired a personal security team that she can take out single-handedly.
Yeah.
Because like, when they turned on her, she beat the hell out of all of them, really, with no sweat. Like, she took a bullet to the gut, but, you know, or a knife or whatever. I don't know. I don't fucking know. I also love that canonically Brian is still alive, but he doesn't even seem to live at his house anymore.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to
when it was ultimately revealed to be Cena, there was a dude where like Mia was like about to get smashed, something like that, and then he just see a body fly behind her.
I had the same thought.
Brian is back. Paul Walker, they're gonna CGI him in. But no, stupid John Cena again.
But I thought at that moment, I was like, oh, we're just suggesting that Brian's home, but we're not going to show him, which I enjoyed. And then John Cena stepped
through. Like they did with Michael Jordan and Air.
Yes, yeah. Which I thought was an interesting choice that I think paid off, but we can get into that.
Yeah.
I also thought it was funny. This is how dumb these movies are. When John Cena was carrying what appeared to be a kayak through the airport, which we soon find out is a giant Batman plane that you could ride out of the bottom of a commercial airliner. When he was carrying that, I should have thought, oh, that's probably a drone pilot thing. But in my head, I was just like, ha ha, he's carrying a kayak.
I knew it was something.
It just never occurred to me. I just thought it was a bit.
It would be bottoming out a commercial airliner, which, by the way, is not a thing.
Can't do it. Unless you're the family.
Unless in the family. And also the stewardess, do you know that was?
I imagine she works for the agency.
That was Paul Walker's daughter.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That warms my heart a little bit.
Yeah.
But like the same way when I thought that Giselle was going to show up on Han's dating app, I was like, why did I think dating app? This is the Fast series. I should have been thinking nuclear fucking submarine.
Yeah.
What was I thinking? Fuck me.
You're I guess
that's
ass.
Just my issue.
You so suck.
To rephrase my question about the direction, do you think the action looked good? Because this is a series that usually has pretty cleanly shot action with a lot of practical stunts, of course, enhanced with CG and blue screening and all that. But sometimes I think that the action, a la Hobbs and Shaw, a la Fate of the Furious, certain points of, I think, Fast and Furious, the fourth one, where the action gets a little choppy and hard to see because it falls into that like green grass style.
I would say it got a little choppy here.
I think that the vehicular action was pretty clean for the most part. It was the hand-to-hand combat where the action was sometimes like had badass moments littered throughout incoherence. I felt that the hand-to-hand combat was a little bit suffered by the action. And I also think that this probably, when it comes to the car action, has the most cartoonish look to the action. But
what happened to, I'm sorry, I just realized, what happened to Little Eastwood?
I asked this question to my buddy who saw the movie a second time yesterday. I said, did he die in Rome or did he just disappear from the movie? And we came to the agreement that he just disappeared from the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll just be back later, which is fine because the apple on that tree fell extremely far. That guy is a shit actor, and his dad is a legend.
Because it's definitely going to be a thing where it's like, in the next one, he'll be like, I guess you guys probably thought I was dead. And half the audience is going to be like, I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, I don't think about you at all.
Yeah.
But actually, you know what? I will say he's pretty good in Wrath of Man. I enjoyed that movie and he's good in it. But
yeah,
in the Fast movies, he does not work. But
did you see Grapes of Wrath of Man?
My God. Wait, is Grapes of Wrath Hemingway?
I don't know.
I think it's Steinbeck.
It's Hemsworth.
It's Steinbeck. I was trying to come up with a pun on Guy Ritchie and Steinbeck, but it's just not happening. Guy Rich Beck. I don't know. Whatever. Life is short.
Grapes of Wrath of Man.
Grapes of Wrath of Man. Love it. I don't know what Grapes of Wrath is about enough for to make a joke.
Me neither.
I think it's about the Dust Bowl.
When I think about the Grapes of Wrath, I think about the California Raisins starting a riot.
I just think of when the Ninja Turtles in the first Ninja Turtles movie like staked out or like hid out at some like house in the country for a while. One of the turtles goes, reminds me of Grapes of Wrath. And as a kid, I laughed like, hey, I'm a grown up. I get that joke. I still don't get that joke because I don't know Grapes of Wrath, but that's the reference point I have.
Grapes of Wrath also reminds me of when I get kicked in the nards.
Ah, yes. Because you feel wrath for getting hit in your grapes.
Yeah.
Your huevos, which is Spanish for eggs, which is Spanish for grapes. Grapes. Yeah, I think that I do miss action that's like, you know, the highway sequence in Fast and Furious 6.
Yeah.
To me,
when
that's
I started like, singing Life is a Highway.
They want to ride it all night long with a tank. No, that that scene I think is like the high point of the whole franchise. And I don't think the action has ever looked good before or since.
I think the mountain run from Fast Five is my favorite.
Yeah, that's a bad five and six are like really where the series like rocks. But I feel
that's
like
where you got your meat and potatoes right there.
That's the meat and potatoes. That's your grapes and your eggs. And I feel like now every action beat has the same sort of general tone as when they're jumping from tower to tower in Furious 7 in Dubai.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this looks cool, but like, what are we doing? You know, it's got that kind of thing.
I watched a YouTube recap video and I wanted to comment because the dude misspoke and it made the edit. And it was only like 2 days removed from when I watched it. But I wanted to comment like, hey, you got to fix this because it's a really big thing that you said. He was like, and then in Fast 7, when they started flying planes into buildings, I'm like, I think you meant cars, my friend.
Yeah, I think he's thinking of something else. Are you trying to tell me that Paul Walker did 9/11?
I think so.
Because I believe it.
And he did it for a dinosaur.
For a dinosaur. Let's face it. Paul Walker's death was essentially 9/11. We'll say 9/11-4 because there was 9/11. There was Heath Ledger. There was the Crocodile Hunter. And then 9/11-4 was Paul Walker.
Yeah.
And so, so he was like 9/15. Remember that joke
on
South Park?
My favorite Paul Walker movie is that almost no one's ever seen.
Running Scared. Yeah, I have that on DVD. I love that movie.
Running Scared rules.
Or Tammy and Her T-Rex. Also really great, young Paul Walker.
You can watch that movie for free if you play the Rick and Morty creators video game High on Life.
Yeah, there you go.
They just have they have it playing on a TV in the background for the entirety of
Running Scared or Tammy and Her T-Rex?
Tammy and the T-Rex.
Oh, right on. Nice. That's funny. I was going to say they did a joke on South Park where they were like, it'll be like 100 9/11s, which is 911,000. I forget how the math is, but yeah. Any final thoughts on Fast X? Predictions for the future entries?
Yeah, here's my prediction.
Is it going to be serious or smarmy? Let's go.
Here's my prediction. Here's what's going to happen, right? In 2 years, we're going to have 2 years of fucking somebody said this about me on the set of Fast X2 X-Men United.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah said this. And oh my God, Ludacris is dead. And then what's going to happen is they're going to get another fucking $17.79 out of my wallet. And then I'm going to go watch Fast X, X2, X-Men United. And I'm going to have a great fucking time.
I invited you to the press screening. It was free.
Yeah.
You could have done it. But, and let's be honest, with rates the way that they are, $17.79, 2 years from now, it's going to be $23.49.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. But yeah,
I'll be able to download it into my Elon Musk brain chip and watch it in the comfort of my own home.
I'm gonna wait until like second generation brain chips. I don't want to be in the first.
Good because this will be the flagship item. Fast X 2 X Men United will be the flagship. Everyone watch it together. It'll be like Batman Forever when the Riddler puts all the shit in.
Oh yeah, houses.
And like they're like, let's all watch this movie together, and then we're all part of the family now. Now everyone start walking off 76.
I previously thought that what was going to happen was that we would meet Papa Toretto. He'd fall in love with Mrs. Shaw, and then they'd get married. The Shaws and the Torettos would then become actual family. But we learned that Papa Toretto, Michael Rooker, died in a car wreck that was kind of caused by Jacob. We learned that, so it's not going to happen. So now I think it's just going to be like kind of just go for broke, get the team back together. They all team up to kill Jason Momoa.
Who says he's dead?
That's true. That is true. So I think it's going to be straightforward. But what I wish would happen, I would love if in the final Fast and Furious movie, it opens with the most incredible chase scene ever. And then at one point, Dom Toretto just whips around a corner and just fucking liquefies a child. Just a random child crossing the street. And now Fast 11 is just a courtroom drama where he has to prove his innocence and that the kid was just collateral damage. But
can the judge be played by either fucking Carl Winslow?
Yes.
Or Judge Reinhold?
Yes. No. But here's the thing. Whoever the judge is, they're going to have their sentence. They're going to be like, Dominic Toretto, for the crime of murdering this kid, and also like thousands of other people over the course of the last 20 years, I sentence you to life in prison, or we race for it. And then, boom, they fly down to Rio, and Dom does this a couple times, and then they race for it. That's the movie I want. But
all right.
You know, so it goes. But here's the judge has
to have some kind of like either connection to or vendetta against the family.
Yeah, maybe he's I don't know. They like bumped. Maybe like during one of the chases, his car got destroyed and it was just like parked.
He owned the parking structure that Vin Diesel kicked down with his bare feet. Yeah,
he's like, I spent my life savings on that. I thought I could charge people.
That was supposed to be an investment for my family.
For my family. Well, family, if any series is not going to be affected by scripts being written entirely by AI, it's this one. So this will not be stopped by the writer's strike at all, because they'll just AI pump out another one and we'll never be able to tell.
I hope that my prediction for the very last movie is that they end up in some kind of area like Egypt where there's much ancient shit, like tombs and tomes around.
Ooh.
And they find a book with just the Mustang logo on it from ancient Egypt, circa 429 AD. And they look into, they restart reading the scroll or the tome or what have you, and they find out that they are the descendants of two ancient Egyptians who used to love to race their chariots around. One was named Fast, and the other named Furious.
The Fast and the Ben Hurrius.
Or they do a big tie-in and Mad Max takes place hundreds of years ago, and they're named after Max and Furiosa, which after eons of translation turned into Fast and Furious.
I want to do a series called The Past and the Previous, and it's like a pup named Scooby-Doo or Flintstones Kids, where it's just a cartoon of all of our Fast family, but as little kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's like Lil Dom, Lil Paul.
Family babies.
Yeah, family babies. And they, but it's The Past and the Previous. And they ride around their cars and they're like, you know, like, we didn't do this for family. We're in Rio. Laws don't apply to me.
They steal like the Rugrats trope of like always breaking out of daycare and shit.
Yeah.
Dom's always got a screwdriver in his diaper like Tommy Pickles does.
Well, he did kill a guy with
maybe
a wrench.
Maybe the Rugrats
once.
Are the prequel to Fast and Furious.
I mean, I'll take it. Yeah. Angelica is Giselle.
John Cena is Chucky.
No, he's Reptar. Hark, I am Reptar. All right, should we do our countdown?
Yeah.
Remember that? It was Hark, I am Reptar. And then do you remember the other one?
No.
The King Kong stand-in? The King Kong stand-in was Thorg. Thorg, and his thing was Thorg hungry. Thorg want eat. That was I loved Rugrats, man. That was my shit.
Yeah. All
right, so we're gonna count down some of our favorite car movies in honor of the Fast Family, because that's a movie that is decreasingly but still consistently about cars.
So we're gonna leave the Fast franchise off the table here, right?
I left the Fast franchise off the table.
Okay.
And I am, I'll start. You started last time. We'll let you get the number one spot this time.
All right.
So at number five, I'm going to do the Ron Howard Formula One racing movie Rush.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, man, you would like it. It's really good. Exciting racing sequences.
Isn't Thor in it?
Thor is in it, as is Daniel Brühl, the guy from Inglourious Basterds and other things. But they play
He also plays fucking... Baron Munchausen.
Yeah, what's his name? Zemo. Baron Zemo.
Zemo.
And Red Baron TV dinners. He they play two real life Formula One racers. It's, you know, about a rivalry between two racers. One of them, played by Chris Hemsworth, is more of a like, I just do the feel of it. I feel the track out, and I, you know, he's like the drift king of it all. You know, he's like, listen, I don't need to study the track. I don't need to practice. Racing's in my blood. I just feel it and I go. Let's go. Let's party. And Daniel Brühl's character is the one who every morning before a race, he maps out the track. He does the math. He looks for everything. And so their two driving styles causes them to have a real life rivalry. The movie, you know, heightens the rivalry. Apparently they did respect one another and they didn't hate one another, but it's really well done. And it's just like a great, like, mid-budget adult drama, which we don't get a lot of. And it's very well acted. It's very exciting. It's just, it's one of my more favorite Ron Howard movies. And it's Hemsworth kind of doing what we don't often get to see him do, which is playing a straight character who's not like goofy in some
not
sort.
Not use a hammer.
Yeah, not use a hammer, but he's like, the humor comes from character-based stuff, not him being silly. You know, it's one of the roles that does not utilize his celebrity as part of the role that the way a Thor does, or when he played Kevin in Ghostbusters, you know, where it's like the joke is that he's Chris Hemsworth. Like, this is him actually like acting a role, and I think you would like it. It's like a real just sturdy adult drama, really exciting stuff. Rush. Great driving movie. And like the racing sequences are incredible. And the story of these two guys is pretty incredible. The guy who Daniel Brühl plays goes through some shit, and it is primo stuff. Highly recommend.
It's on my list.
Yeah, definitely check it out. We could even devote an episode to it sometime because it's good.
My number five is Cars.
No, right on.
With Lyle.
You got anything else to say about it?
With Lightning McQueen, baby.
That's right. Which I guess...
Ka-chow! That's what he says. Ka-chow.
I haven't seen that one in ages. And I gotta say, I know it's not the most beloved Pixar movie, but I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
I remember enjoying it until my little sister, who I brought to the movies for just a brother-sister day, who was probably like 3 or 4 years old at the time. I was like, let's take her to McDonald's. Let's take her to the movies. What do the kids want? And then halfway through the movie, she was like, can we leave? And I said, well, I want to see what happens with Lightning McQueen. Does he win the big race? And she was like, I don't like this movie.
She was like, of course he wins the big race. What the fuck do you think this is? This is Cars.
Also, Michael Keaton is in it.
And Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
And Larry the Cable Guy, Paul who Newman. Isn't actually a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a character played by a guy named Dan.
He plays Tow-Mater.
Tow-Mater.
No, Tow-Mater.
Man, it's been so long since I've seen it. I know he was called Mater, but I didn't know it was Tow Mater. And now I get it.
It's a tow truck.
Yeah, I barely remember it, man. I just remember the racing sequences looking pretty cool.
It was created by John Lasseter.
Okay.
I'm not reading a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, John Lasseter, I think, might have some baggage. I don't know. I don't care.
All right, you're number four.
All right, my number four, I'm going to go with Walter Hill's The Driver. You okay?
That's okay. Based on a video game.
No, this is an old movie from the 80s, which I'm holding the 4K up right now. I only just recently saw this for the first time. The Driver is like a minimalist of... Like, Edgar Wright's a big fan of it. Actually, I think that's his quote on the front. But
Baby Driver?
But no, I mean, it was an influence for Baby Driver. The Driver is Ryan O'Neal. And what's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Bruce Dern. Ryan O'Neal's a guy who's a getaway driver. He steals a car for you. He does the getaway. The Ryan Gosling movie Drive is heavily influenced by it. But this has a little bit more, like, direct car action in it. But it's like... It's just got a great mood. It's Walter Hill, you know, who did like Warriors, things like that. Perfect 5-star movie. I fucking love The Driver. And there's no such thing as a conversation about movies with cars that doesn't involve The Driver. It's an all-timer for a reason. And it was notoriously hard to get for a fair amount of time. And then I finally got it, and then it got a release, and I got my hands on it because I had to get it. But you would like this movie. This shit's cool.
It sounds cool. I like Drive. I like all the things that you say that it inspired. So
it's like low key, quiet, cool, but then it, you know, accelerates into, you know, some pretty intense stuff. But I mean, Bruce Dern versus Ryan O'Neal is great, and it's got Isabel Adjani in it, who's in this great movie called Possession that I love, and she's wonderful. So highly recommend Driver, number four.
Driver. My number four is Cars 2. Now, this one's different because he's going to Japan, Italy, and England. So Tom Mater gets confused for a British spy vehicle voiced by none other than Michael Caine.
Yes.
Finn McMissile.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So that's a good movie.
Do you actually like Cars 2?
Yeah.
Where's this a bit? Okay.
It's great. It's number four on my list.
All right. So, love how tickled you are by this. If Cars 3 is number 3 on your list, I'm going to shit my pants.
Okay.
And I just farted. All right. Number 3. It's another one with a visual assistance. Is Christine the Stephen King movie directed by John Carpenter, and it is about a dork who is obsessed with this old car that he sees at a dump, buys it, and decides that he's going to fix it up and turn it into something. And at the same time as he starts fixing up this car, he starts to become a little bit more confident. A little too confident, some would say cocky, and it starts to become clear that he's having a relationship with this car where he is becoming so obsessed with the car, and the car is also becoming so obsessed with him, to the point that the car starts killing people on his behalf. This movie is scary. It's super stylish. I've not actually read the Stephen King book. I've been meaning to do it. But John Carpenter directs the fuck out of it. It has this one amazing scene where a bunch of bullies smash Christine to bits. And then you watch as the car reassembles itself back into fighting form. And it's all done practically. It's all done with cool, like in-camera effects. And it is just unbelievable. Great performances. Some of the best cinematography that you're ever going to see in an 80s horror movie. And it's like an underrated John Carpenter classic. And it's just... It's absolutely stellar. Christine fucking owns. It's it might be my favorite John Carpenter movie, and I have Halloween and The Thing in my list. But it's
what
just
year is this?
This was, I want to say 1980.
Definitely inspired that Kavinsky album that we like.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
A lot.
And actually
or basically it's the exact plot of that.
If you are into the like that sort of vaporwave, you know, cars running through neon cities at night, Driver's where it's at.
Love it.
Christine was 1983, and man, just like this is the shit. Christine is so incredible. And it's also one of those movies where it stars a whole bunch of teenagers, but the teenagers are just clearly actors who are like 47. It's like, it's me in high school. It's like, okay, yeah. Tell that to your back hair guy who's...
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah, exactly. You're up. Number three.
Cars 3.
Yeah, baby!
Now, Cars 3 is the 18th Pixar movie. Not a lot of people know that. And now Lightning McQueen is on his way out, and there's a bunch of new race cars taking over the style. And so there's a dichotomy between, just like he dealt with Paul Newman in the first movie, you know, when do you change the old guard?
And when do you change the, your oil?
The old guard is changed to Cannibal Army Hammer, who plays Jackson Storm. And as you know, storm, rain... Rain causes rust. Rust eats cars. Classic Army Hammer roll.
There you go. Classic.
And then it ends in a... It says here it ends when his character eats all the other cars in Cars Land.
Now, have you actually seen this movie?
Yeah, dude.
And it's do you actually like this movie?
I love this movie. It's third on my list of best Cars movies.
Now here's the thing, you are out of Cars movies, so there's still two left, and I'm dying to know where you're gonna end up.
Am I?
I don't know. I feel like there's only three, right?
Unless well, what's there's... your number two? Let's go to your number All right. two.
My number two is a movie that I actually watched last night, and I had never even heard of it until a couple weeks ago, and I pulled it up last night because it sounded cool. It's a documentary called Hands on a Hard Body. And what Hands on a Hard Body is a shot directly on video documentary from 1999 about a Nissan dealership deep in Texas that has a yearly contest where they put out a Nissan hard body truck and they get, I think, 23 people and you put your hand on the car.
Oh, this is what Mr. Beast ripped off for his videos.
And the last person with their hand on the car gets to keep it. This movie, this is a documentary, is incredible because each of these people with their hand on the car is a character with a reason to want the car and a style of how they plan to mentally and physically maintain this challenge. But they're all a bunch of people from deep, deep Texas. This one guy, he's like, this contest, I was inspired. I'm reminded by this movie I saw. It's called The Highlander because at the end, there can only be one Highlander.
Apt analysis.
And that's as deep as it gets for him. But like, these people are insane. Like, this one lady just constantly listens to gospel and just dances and sings and laughs to herself in order to have the strength of the Lord. Everybody has a different strategy, but it's like a fascinating window into just a world that I don't see. And it's a world where it's like, yo, if you get a truck, that changes your life, you know, like, that's a big upgrade for any of these people. And but it's also just kind of comical. But it what's interesting, too, is it also helps you to check your biases, because a couple of these people, they got this accent. This is how they talk. But you listen to them, you go, oh, this person's not stupid. I'm just assuming they're stupid because of this accent. Now, most of them really fucking stupid, but a couple of them are just normal people who aren't dumb at all. But it was famously made into a Broadway musical by Phish, but it didn't last long. On Broadway.
That's weird because most things created by Phish last forever.
A single song still playing.
Yeah.
And it had Keith Carradine. I think
it's still on tour from 69.
Yeah, it's it was just a fascinating movie, and it's something that Jenna and I put it on is like, yeah, let's see what it is. It's just a throwaway. And by the end, I was just like riveted. And it's just so bizarre. But I got to thinking, like, could I do that challenge? And the answer? No, I would probably make it 12 hours max, and I would be bitching from like hour three on.
I couldn't do it.
You got to get that mental game like Highlander. All right, what's your number two?
Plans.
Is that about cars?
It takes place in the Cars universe.
Fair enough. Now, have you seen Planes?
Definitely cars in it from what I've seen of the movie, which I've seen multiple times.
Okay.
And it is my second favorite movie about cars. Now, Planes, as you know, is a computer-animated car spin-off film produced by Disney Toon Studios.
So this is like the Space Buddies of cars, if you will.
In the film Dusty Crop Hopper, a small town crop dusting plane, follows his dreams by competing in a world air race despite his fear of heights.
Now he's played by Dane Cook, correct?
Yes.
There you go.
I knew that.
Yes, off there you go. Because you've seen this. You've seen this so many times.
You didn't see any screens change in my glasses reflections at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, this is because you love planes.
Yeah.
It's your second favorite movie about cars.
Priyanka Chopra Jonas is also in this movie.
Oh, well, all right.
Yes.
I guess I'll move to my number one then.
Yeah.
This is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. I loved it so much that the only way I could get a copy of it was by getting the Japanese version. But it is in English, but Vanishing Point. Vanishing Point.
That is what Death Proof is.
It's the car from Death Proof. By,
yeah.
Is Vanishing Point. And it, quite literally, it's this guy whose job it is to take a car, drive it to a new location. He's transporting the car. And so this dude, he's like a former cop, and he just gets high on speed, like actual speed, not like car speed. He gets high on Benzedrines, we'll say. And decides to drive across the country. And when cops try to pull him over for speeding, he says, "Ah, fuck it." He keeps going. And so it's a cross-country feature-length chase where cars are chasing him while a blind DJ recounts what's happening over the radio. It is a classic new Hollywood entry. Really, really cool stuff. Just so much style. And the lead character, his name is Kowalski, which is my favorite name to give to fake characters whenever I do dumb characters. But it's just so exciting. It's so interesting. And it's just one of those, like, you know, man with a death wish, just drive until he dies kind of things. And it just really captures the post-60s kickback energy of the era. And I think it's just, this is probably in my top 10 all-time favorite movies ever made. And I only just recently saw it like 6 months ago and then had to get a import so I could watch it again and again. See, it's all in Japanese on the back.
Nice.
Vanishing a pointer! But yeah, really good stuff. Love Vanishing Point. Highly recommend to anybody. It's the best.
All right.
What's your number one? What spinoff planes, of Cars fire, is your number
one? Sequel to Planes. A lot of people think, how can a sequel to a spinoff be any good? Well, let me ask you this, Dan. Did you like Casino 2?
I loved it. Big fan. I can't believe they brought back Joe Pesci.
Yeah. From the dead.
Yeah.
Which is where this...
Turns out they were using foam bats.
...movie brought the Cars franchise out of death.
So instead, and now you see
Lightning McQueen everywhere.
Instead of like diminishing returns, it would seem that these are enhancing returns.
Oh yeah,
the series. See, a lot of people sleep on the last MCU Blades movie.
Yeah,
right on. This is like one of those one shots.
My actual favorites are Speed Racer, Ford vs Ferrari, The Transporter, Drive, and Baby Driver.
Oh, right on. All good entries, but I'm glad you stuck to the bit. Respect.
Thanks.
Respect. I
had this thought this morning in the shower, I'm like, you know what I'm gonna do? All Cars.
Hell yeah, do it. Yeah, the to comment on that though, I gave serious consideration to Baby Driver and Drive and Ford and Ferrari. And
Rush is essentially Ford v Ferrari.
It's very similar in tone. Story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right on. Well, that's that, guys, gang, ladies. The Cars, man, family, it is what it is. But
most of your childhood in a car with your family sometimes, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And so reminder, at Movie Cast on all of the things. You can check out all my shit at scullyvision.com. Steven, anything for us?
No.
Awesome. So remember, if you're here, your family,
and Dominic
Prosecco. And your cars.
Ciao.
All right. Well, that's been I Like to Movie.
Bye.
Bye.